Fundamentalist Apologists, Christian and Mythicist, written by Bart Ehrman, read by Ken Teutsch. As I've been reading in preparation for my course on July 19th, Did Jesus Really Exist? A freebie, check it out on the website. Another thought occurred to me about the similarities between mythicist writers, those supporting the idea that Jesus of Nazareth never did exist, and conservative Christian apologists. They seem to have a lot in common, even though they take virtually the opposite views of things. I suppose I noticed that long ago, but never delved much into it. But it was probably 15 or 20 years ago when I was struck by the fact that the mathematical principle, Bayes' theorem, used to work out the probability of a cause based on the known effects, and which sure seems highly scientific in the general sense, and in fact has been used to reach remarkable conclusions in a number of fields, has been applied by two scholars with respect to the historical Jesus, by Oxford philosopher Richard Swinburne, a deeply committed Christian, to demonstrate on statistical probability that Jesus was probably raised from the dead, and by independent scholar Richard Carrier, a deeply committed atheist, to demonstrate, using the very same method of establishing probability, that Jesus never existed. Go figure. Let's hear it for mathematical probabilities. I've had a number of people, including experts in the theorem and its use, explain to me why one or the other of them, Swinburne and/or Carrier, misuses the theorem, but that's not my point here. I'm just saying I find the rather contrary conclusions based on the same statistic model both intriguing and a bit amusing. In any event, this past week, while reading more of the mythicist writings, I realized how much they are like Christian apologetics, the reasoned defense of the faith. I get the Christian apologist thing. I myself was one, fairly hardcore, 50 years ago. I was interested in argument and objective proof that I, and those who were like-minded, thought could prove that God exists, that Jesus was physically raised from the dead, that the Bible was inspired without error, and on and on. I devoured the writings of the major apologists of the time, from C.S. Lewis to Josh McDowell. I took a semester-long course on apologetics, on how to argue for the truth of the faith with evidence that virtually no one could deny, we believed. And I used it privately and in public talks. How things change. For the past, 30 years or so, I've had a number of debates with Christian apologists who have used some of the strategies we used to use, and a number of others as well. I almost never enjoy these debates. I find them rather painful and plodding, and usually about 15 minutes into them, I begin writing notes to myself asking, why are you doing this to yourself? In any event, the mythicist writers and writings do seem a lot like the conservative Christian apologist writers and writings, mutatis mutandis, and there's a lot of mutandis. Both are passionate about their views and realize they have to persuade others of them. They are usually eager to do so, almost as if it's a matter of life and death. For the Christians, I suppose it is, not so much for the atheists. They are deeply invested in objective truth and the ability to establish it on logical grounds. They hold positions that most people who are not in their camp, conservative Christian believers or atheist skeptics, do not find persuasive and probably never will find persuasive. As a result, for the most part, the only people they convince are those who already agree with them, or possibly realize they will experience an emotional release or unburdening if they start to agree with them. That is, their views fit well with the perspectives these people are leaning toward already. They make arguments that often don't make any sense to anyone else, or seem hugely stressed or just plain silly. I'm not saying they necessarily are silly, but they seem to outsiders to be. And, well, okay, sometimes they are silly. They steadfastly refuse to see the flaws in their arguments, but virtually always simply double down on them if someone points out their flaws. They often make their arguments by appealing to evidence that their readers are not familiar with and have almost no way of evaluating. But since they are the ones who state the evidence as well as draw their conclusions from it, there is no way for the readers to evaluate it for themselves, since they're not familiar with it. The idea is simply to make the evidence sound convincing, even if anyone who is deeply familiar with it would think, yeah, no, not really. They often pile up argument after argument after argument, more or less like throwing strands of spaghetti at the wall to see which ones will stick. That is, to change the analogy, they often use a kind of shotgun approach, where they argue this, 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 and this, so that if an expert then shows why this and this are problematic, they, the apologist, can always reply, well, that's what you say, but notice, all you readers, that this so-called expert has refused to respond to this, this, and this. There's often a claim that anyone who disagrees with them is ignorant and biased, but that anyone who is objective will see that they are right. Well, those are just a few of the things that occur to me. I won't be giving this kind of meta view of mythicist approaches to defending their non-faith in my talks, but will instead be giving the hardcore evidence that convinces nearly everyone else who looks at the matter, whether conservative Christian, moderate Christian, crazily liberal Christian, Jew, Gentile, agnostic, atheist, or pagan, that whatever else you think about him, Jesus almost certainly existed. I will, of course, also be dealing with major objections raised by our leading mythicists.